But yeah, and Danny Elfman sort of talks about that in the featurette on the DVD of this, about how, you know, for the time, Jerry Goldsmith's score was completely progressive, and the irony is, you know, 30 years later, there was no way he could write a score that was as progressive as Goldsmith's was.
Mm.
So, I mean, he just did what he does.
Did what he does best.
And I thought it was one of the best scores from that year. And actually, how many 2001 movies have we done?
We've done AI. We've done AI.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Fellowship of the Ring. And this.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I did Jay and Silent Bob a while back, but we decided we were going to redo that.
This is all pretty basic, pre-battle
yeah.
motifs, you know, just kind of know. They're very interesting, not much to say about it. It works.
Yeah.
It works, but... This is all real. I mean, I'm pretty sure none of this is blue screen.
Yeah.
I mean, that exterior was, in fact, built.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Tim Burton mentioning in his commentary that he wanted to... All right. Tim Burton was somewhat specific in the look of, at least this particular, the third act, you know, he wanted something to look like those rocks he used to buy off the back of comic books and grow in a... Which I thought that was kind of funny.
Mm.
Oscar clip.
Not so much Oscar clip as print speech, gratuitous hero speech.
Yeah. Right?
That
was really amazing. What
was that, Dave? No.
Better than some of them I've heard.
Yeah, I really would like to know the name of that actor. That's
Brian, what happened to Internet Movie Database?
I don't have it up.
Yeah.
Rick Baker did the gorillas for Gorillas in the Mist, didn't he? I know Stan Winston did the gorillas for Congo, did he not?
Yeah.
Stan Winston did the gorillas for Congo. I'm pretty sure Rick Baker did the gorillas for Girls in the Mist.
Probably right.
Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but...
Yeah.
This
is better than Congo, though. God, that was such a disappointing movie.
Some really interesting ape effects, though.
Yeah,
I flipped past that on the television the other day. There's some pretty interesting ape effects.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about it.
But you compare that puppy to the book, it doesn't compare.
Yeah.
Book is so much better.
I know you're a fan of the Jerry Goldsmith score for that particular movie, though.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where, you know, I can't completely explain why I like it. It's just a really good adventure score.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not one of the best scores Goldsmith ever did, but it's pretty fun to listen to. So which battle scene do we want to reference? I'm thinking Braveheart.
Yeah.
Although you can go with any number of them.
I mean, some of the shots remind me of Braveheart.
Yeah.
I for the most part like the way it was staged, though.
Yeah.
You know, it works. It almost works. That's probably the nicest thing I can say about it, is that it almost works. I mean, you know, especially this quadruped stuff.
Yeah.
Know, which this was really, I mean, I really got a kick out of this. And then, you know, the solution that Leo's character comes up with, you know.
Yeah,
that's
Mark Wahlberg's character.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Leo
comes
up with.
This has a, I like the nightmarish quality of this.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
They're really nightmarish, though. I mean, that's not exactly the word I would use to describe this.
It's
more suspenseful.
Well, see, when I think of nightmares, I think of, like, you know, not necessarily the kid being trapped into the horse, but, like, you know, just this right here. I mean, just, you know, him running on, you know, he's not, you know, him running on his own, you know, that's. I felt the suspense, but I also felt the kind of nightmarish quality to it all. I just,
but
this felt pretty creepy right here.
Eh. Again, I don't know if I would use
that
word.
I like when he said, I mean, Jesus. That always makes me laugh. If you're gonna have a big explosion in a Tim Burton movie. Which, you know,
this is a pretty dang cool one.
Yeah, and you know, and it was still, I love that shot.
Yeah,
I love that shot. But it worked. It's, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, a big budget studio movie explosion. It is, but you know, it's also very much a Tim Burton moment at the same time, which I was able to appreciate about it. Now you're getting into the Braveheart stuff. This is where it gets kind of like a little bit nauseating, kind of like, you know, we've seen this before. This is.
I mean, even that scene's a little bit reminiscent of Braveheart. Battle of Sterling, the start of it at least.
Yeah, but still, this battle scene still seems pretty fresh. Up until the point where it, you know, gets to be hand-on-hand combat, you know, and this is when it starts to get a little kind of formulaic, for lack of a better word.
Okay.
This is a really wonderful exterior. I can't get over how cool that is. Yeah, this is when it starts to get kind of flat.
Yeah.
I really do feel as if this entire sequence kind of falls on its face after the explosion, which, you know, you would... You know, I was in a comic book store right around the time this movie came out, and I actually got someone involved in a pretty funny discussion about where the apes got the horses in the Tim Burton version.
Uh-huh.
Somebody like pointed out to me, I was talking with a bunch of comic book geeks, and they were like, and, you know, we're discussing, you know, Tim Burton version versus, you know, Chuck Heston version, and I can't believe I'm admitting all this, by the way, but, you know, we got into one of those geek discussions, you know, and it was like, well, where did the apes get the horses in the, you know, if they were on Earth the entire time in the Chuck Heston version, where did they get the apes?
Don't say anything.
Huh? What?
Yeah, well, never mind.
What? Oh, come on.
Don't give away the ending.
I was kidding before. You know I was kidding.
Yeah.
I was kidding. But you know, like, where did they get the horses in the Tim Burton movie? if they weren't on the planet they were on in the Chuck Heston version, you know.
is that famous scream that you hear in every single action movie.
Right. Actually, isn't it someplace else?
Not in this movie.
Yeah, I thought it was someplace else. But I remember hearing it.
You might be right.
I think it's someplace else, though.
What's the name of Stella Warren's character?
What is her name?
I don't know if it's ever... Is it ever... Well, I'm guessing it's in the credits, obviously.
Yeah.
The meeting of the minds.
This is probably the only part of this battle that works for me, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty much the best one.
I didn't quite see it coming, though. I mean, if there's... Maybe I just haven't been paying attention enough to the movie, but, I don't quite feel the tension between these two guys that would lead to this sort of epic battle between them, you know?
Well, I mean, you get a little backstory from Ari. Right. I mean, they used to be friends, and then Thade came between them, and yada, yada, yada.
I guess that's supposed to be enough to support it.
Which he does for me.
I mean, him kind of dying, that was kind of just a bit of a waste of that to me. But I guess...
I felt the weight of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I mean to say. I didn't quite feel the weight of it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the screen, bro. That screen right there.
Yeah.
No.
I know.
It's not quite the same.
I know you hear that like the Star Wars movie.
I'm sure you do.
Right.
Well, see, but it's not quite the same.
The only reason I said no before was because I thought you meant it came before the first time we heard it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But, no, it sounds similar.
It sounds similar, but it's not. Okay.
Now, that would suck. It's like some monkey dude, like, trying to crush your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, no. But what that stupid comment leads me to saying is that, you know... In this movie, when you've got people fighting apes, I guess it makes it a bit more apparent to me, you know, how... And it discusses a bit in the Charles Heston movie, you know, how fragile humans are, you know, and how strong these apes are, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if you have these strong apes who are also as intelligent as us, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they became sort of the overriding power, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I like how subtle and understated the science fiction aspect of this movie is. I like that it isn't all... The entire thing isn't relying on special effects, and, you know...
Yeah.
And in that way, it is also close to the book, in that, you know, the science fiction aspect is rarely touched on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It really did feel like, you know, when you're watching the Franklin Schaffner film, that, you know, yeah, this is a... big science fiction movie. I felt that. I was like, you know, there was like too much winking back at the camera. I don't know if that makes any sense, but...
I don't know if I would say there was a whole lot of winking back at the camera.
Yeah, I don't quite feel that.
I noticed it, but, you know, I felt as if... Like,
I guess some of the sarcasm of Charles Heston's character.
Yeah.
Maybe for that. But anything else. Buffy. You know, this whole ending was just kind of weird for me. Him now coming out of space and then bowing down immediately. I guess it kind of works on a level. It's just this is totally not anything I was expecting. You know,
I fell for it. You know, not, personally, I mean,
not how your typical.
Well, I mean,
battle action.
I bought it. How they bought it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, everything you've heard before, then to me it would make sense that this is the reaction this would get.
Mm-hmm. It's just the whole thing as a whole for me just kind of seems. I mean, you know, for me it works, you know, but it just kind of seems weird as a way to sort of come towards the end of the movie here.
Yeah.
kind of like how Thade's one step ahead of everyone.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he's not falling for it, which kind of helps me buy this moment. You know, the entire, you know, because it's discussed that, you know, Thade's family, you know, is in fact one step ahead of, you know, the ape society. You know, they know what really happened.
Yeah.
And how, you know, how the apes came to be. In which that helped his reaction of, you know, knowing what's really going on. That helped me buy the entire, you know, because, you know, again, like, you know, like Michael Clark Duncan's character, you know, he's totally in the dark about, you know, where they came from, and he completely believes in the religious aspects and this, you know. And that also helped me buy this ending. I really did like this. I really did prefer this ending to the Chuck Hessen version.
Really?
I did.
Yeah, I go back and forth on that. You know, I mean,
you can very easily go back and forth. You know, there's the shock value versus the the notoriety, and then there's also the notoriety versus the shock value. You know, which is better?
Right.
Which feels more organic?
Yeah. And the thing is, though, it's like, and I didn't really see it at the time, but I kind of see it now. This, the ending here is not that organic. I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but then again, it doesn't really work. It doesn't really make a, well, actually, no, it makes more sense in the book than it does here. Because this is actually, the very end of this movie is actually very similar to almost exactly like the ending in the book. So,
and as we all know, Rod Serling came up with the ending to the original film.
Yeah.
I thought the sort of the movements and how he examines the gun and how he handles the gun was just incredibly authentic, you know, as you would think like an ape or a chimp would look at it. Very well done.
I don't know, I still like this ending. I mean, I know there's the...
I mean, I like it, too.
Yeah, I like it. I like it, too. It's just some of the... This part of the ending I actually like a little bit better. You know, some of the exterior parts of the ending, you know, the whole ship coming down, all that other stuff. This part with Thane right here, I kind of like the most out of the entire ending for this section.
I bought the entire ending. I still buy it, and I still fall for it every time. And
I was intrigued by the ending here. Mm. I don't know if I don't think I would prefer to the original film.
Well, again, you know, it has a lot. It does have a lot to do with, you know, just us being more adherent to, you know this kind of film as opposed to the film that came out in 1968.
Yeah.
You know, we're just. I mean, plus, you know, I mean, I've told you about this with, it's very similar to the reason I never got, you know, what the big deal was about The Godfather, Brian. You know, just like. I'd seen the concept, you know, ran into the ground of pop culture so much that, I mean, I just, it didn't, the Chuck Hessen ending never felt that fresh to me.
Well,
I mean, just like, very much like, you know, the idea of, you know, the Godfather being so ran into the ground of pop culture that, you know, I couldn't appreciate that movie for what it was worth, you know.
Well,
but that's not that. But that is a very small reason. I mean, I was just able to appreciate, because I had not read the book before I saw the Tim Burton version.
Nor had I.
But you know, so the fact that it was close to the book had nothing to do with it. I just liked this ending. It felt original, and it was a Tim Burton ending. You know, compelling, and it was disturbing, and it was just something I was able to appreciate much more than I was with the Chuck Hessen movie.
Well, the thing is, though, Ron, I mean, you know, and the thing is, though, it's like, I mean, you know, on a lot of these commentaries, you talk about how, you know, and even in our conversations, you talk about things, you know, plot twists and stuff like that happening organically, and you really appreciate that. This, in the book, in the movie, this is not an organic ending. There's nothing in the movie previous to that that really calls for that type of ending.
Mm-hmm. I know. I totally appreciate your I appreciate your views on it. I mean, I do.
And I mean, I like the ending. It's tantalizing, to be sure. And you know, it is very similar to the book, but also the book has that extra layer to it in that. This, in that what we've read previous to that is just, you know, it makes you question everything you read before that,
mm-hmm.
too, so.
Well, I appreciate your views on it, you know, and, I mean, but I also have my own opinion on it. And,
yeah, and I mean, I appreciate, you know, I do appreciate your views too. I mean, you know, I understand why you don't, you know, like The Godfather and stuff like that, and I can understand why the ending to Planet of the Apes doesn't quite grab you as much as it does others.
And it wasn't just because I'd seen that image over and over again.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just because of that. It wasn't just because of how ingrained that image was in pop culture. It wasn't just because of that. I just remember very, very much like Dave was watching the Chuck Esson version for the first time the other day. You know, I just didn't understand it. I just didn't get what the big deal was about it. You know, I mean, again, you know, the concept is absolutely fascinating. You know, but you know, beyond that, I mean, I had to watch the Chuck Esson version along with, you know, the documentary and the subsequent five films, you know, a couple of times before I was really able to appreciate it. You know, I mean, I just have my opinions, you know, and they're very hard to support. You know, I apologize to anyone who doesn't understand them because, you know, I'm just a hard person to understand in the first place. But, I mean, you know, and it isn't just because, you know, it's a movie, you know, that's before my time. It has a lot more to do with that. It goes a lot deeper than that. But, you know, so, I mean, but those are my views on it, and, you know, I mean, I will more or less stick to them, you know, and, I mean, that's why I'll never be, you know, any kind of great movie historian or critic, just because, you know, I mean, I just see a lot of these movies the way I want to see them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, but again, you know, these movies, this movie and the Chuck Esson film, are supposed to be those kinds of movies that you see your own way.
Yeah,
and you interpret your own way. So,
well, I mean, movie going in itself is subjective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's your opinion at the end of the day.
Yeah,
you know, and the thing is, it's like there are going to be, you know, put 25 people in the movie theater watching the same movie, they're going to come out, each one's going to come out a little differently. So, I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, your opinion. I mean, one of the things I like about talking about movies with both of you is the fact that you can back up your opinion. I may not agree with you, but at least you can back it up. You've thought about your opinion.
Mm.
And, you know, if you can't back it up beyond, oh, well, it just wasn't that good, or, oh, it was, come on, it was great. I mean, you know.
What you're saying, Brian, that
you can't
BS a preference?
How can you bullshit? How can be bullshit to say a preference? My all-time favorite movie line from High Fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that. I mean, you know. I'd like to think I'm not one of those people who I'd like to think that I'm not a person who's going to...
A movie snob?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Which you're not. You know, you listen to our opinions with real care and everything.
Yeah.
And then you tell us why we're wrong. You know.
Well, I mean,
you listen to what we have to say, and then you tell us why we're wrong. You know, that's what I like about talking about movies with you, Ryan.
Well, the thing
you
is,
wait until we're done to tell us what's wrong about what.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. I'm kidding.
No, I mean, there's a quote that I read from the late great Pauline Kael, who's a great film critic, as most people know, passed away actually same year this movie came out. I read a quote with her where she said, "Only a twerp would chastise." What was it? I mean, I know I've quoted in one of my reviews or something like that before. It's like only a twerp would chastise someone for like their opinions on a movie or something like that. But I mean, the bottom line is, it's like.
Wow, Elfin's theme right there is just like Mars. Planets. Sorry, dude.
That's alright.
Similar.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, you know, it's the bottom line that, you know, precisely what we've been talking about. It's like, you know, you shouldn't just say, oh, well, you're wrong, I'm right. You know, that's not the way to look at it. It's like everybody's got their own opinion, you know, accept it, maybe show them a different perspective of looking, and, you know, but not necessarily chastise them for it.
Can I say that I really like how the statue is revealed very similar to the way the Statue of Liberty is revealed?
As do I.
Yeah,
right.
I like that. That's a nice little nod to the original.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just plain creepy.
Yeah.
He expresses his. I like Mark Wahlberg's face acting here.
Uh huh.
It works.
Yeah. And this is very much how the book ends.
And the ending of the book is just as disturbing.
Yeah.
And you know. Again, you know. You would think, I mean, it would be nice if this was picked up as a franchise. But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, I mean, you know that they're not going to wait. You know, the thing is, you know, they're probably not going to wait until, you know, years down the line when, you know, it's when people are just suffering creatively and they're going to like, well, you know, what the heck, let's do a sequel to Planet of the Apes, and it's not going to be nearly as,
yeah,
right.
You know, which happens to a lot of franchises. You know, you wait way too long to make a sequel, and
mm-hmm.
it's just not in the fabric.
Yeah.
That it was. It's just not in the fabric of society the way it was when the original came out, and that's why a sequel is not going to work when it is eventually done. Because I can almost be pretty sure that there is going to be one done. You know, they may very well wait. You know, 5 or 10 years from now, but you know, it's probably
mm-hmm.
going to. It's probably going to happen, and it's probably not going to be nearly as interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are more or less my feeling. I mean, I would love to see a sequel, but it needs to come out sooner rather than later.
I know, as would I. I mean, ideally, I'd love to see it from Tim Burton,
mm-hmm.
although
that's
I know
not,
that's not going to happen.
Right, gonna
so,
happen.
Next best scenario, I mean, I would love to see somebody like Terry Gilliam or
mm-hmm.
Alex Proyas or somebody like that pick it up and see what they could do with it. But, no, I mean, that last image definitely gave me a hankering to see another sequel.
Right,
to see another movie.
Definitely.
I like this mix by Danny Elfman here.
It's great.
It
except
works.
For the fact that on the soundtrack it's
no,
got
it's,
like the dialogue.
Oh, yeah, it's horrible.
That's
dreadful.
But the remix is great. I
yeah.
love it.
So anyway, closing thoughts, gentlemen.
Dave?
Not enough black eyes. All right.
I appreciate both of you guys really getting me into this. This is
And didn't the documentary, didn't watching the documentary make you want to see all four movies?
Oh, yeah, the other four sequels? Yeah, I mean, you know, when I saw the end of the original version, I was like, you know, okay, I don't necessarily feel the need to see any more. You know, not quite like when I saw the end of this version, where I was like, oh, wow, you know, another sequel. Because the ending image is so powerful, you know, another sequel would be cool. With the original version, I mean, the ending was powerful, but, you know, I didn't really feel the need to see another sequel, another sequel like I did with this. But then when I saw the documentary, you know, then I kind of got really interested.
Yeah, the overall story arc.
Right.
You know, it's like,
I went online and kind of viewed the synopsis of the overall, you know, the overlying story arc between all the different movies. So, that definitely makes me interested to see more. So, you know, again, this is not the greatest movie in the world, but, you know, when the first time I saw it, especially at the IMAX theater, it was pretty entertaining. And it certainly has its moments, and, I mean, there are certainly some very good character performances in there. And so, you know, I mean, I enjoy it for what it is.
Thanks, Dave. Next. Ron? Well, you know, I pretty much said my piece throughout the discussion we had here. And I agree with Dave, you know, I mean, just really some really, really wonderful moments, you know, surrounded by some pretty weak moments, but, you know, they weren't weak enough to highlight how bad the movie was. I mean, they were more or less just moments that, you know, you kind of felt, you know, had to be executed in order to get to the next scene. But, you know, I mean, no, I genuinely enjoy this movie for the entertainment value of it. I genuinely enjoy it as a Tim Burton movie, you know, and, you know, I mean, just, you know, bring it on. A sequel I would be fascinating to go see. I mean, I'll chill out my $8 to see it just like every other idiot, you know, just don't make it too far off in the future, you know, and keep a lot of the aspects that Tim Burton was able to maintain in this one. And just keep up the good work, Tim Burton and Danny Elfman. Keep it up.
Okay. I basically said my piece about the movie as we were going on as well. This is a fun movie. I enjoy it. I'm intrigued by it. My big shout-out at the end here is actually to 20th Century Fox. The reason of that is the Planet of the Apes series, the Star Wars saga, the Dator Stood Still, the Abyss, the Alien series, the Predator movies, basically every science fiction film they've ever put out that I've seen. All of these movies, I've become a huge science fiction geek, for lack of a better term. To me, the genre is absolutely fascinating, and 20th Century Fox continues to put out exciting movies if not always good, they're always interesting to see. I mean, this year they put out The Day After Tomorrow. They've got Alien vs. Predator and iRobot coming out. And I just hope they keep doing it. I mean, you know, not just their movies. I mean, they've got Firefly, they've got The X-Files, and, you know, it's such a fascinating genre when it's done right. And even when it's not done right, it's still pretty good. So, keep pushing the boundaries in there, Fox. And that's it for me. I'm Brian Scuttle.
I'm Ronnie Hayes.
Hey, Mom.
And we're out.